The Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast joins you once again where the Milwaukee Brewers continue to just keep getting it done. It went 4 of 6 this past week, taking 2 of 3 from both the Reds and the Pirates. There were a couple clunkers in that mix of those two losses, but 4 pretty convincing wins otherwise. And the Brewers still in very good position to clinch a playoff berth. Their magic number to reach the playoffs is 4. They go into a massive series starting on Monday. It's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in St. Louis against the Cardinals. They are 2 games ahead of the Cardinals for the right to host the wild card game, which is looking more and more likely like the destination for the Brewers. And this series will say a lot about whether or not they will be hosting that game on October 2nd, or if the Cardinals will be hosting. The Cardinals still have to, you know, get into the game. They're being chased by the Rockies, and it's pretty much 3 teams for those 2 spots. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am the host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. We're going to be joined by Tom Haudricourt in just a minute to talk about the playoff pursuant Milwaukee Brewers. They capped off a successful series in Pittsburgh by winning on Sunday in convincing fashion, 13-6. Some anxious moments in the fifth there when the Rockies scored 4 times, but some home runs. Travis Shaw putting one into the Allegheny River, an absolute bomb. Mike Moustakas had a home run. Christian Yelich, MVP. Christian Yelich continued to rock the vote with a 3-run homer that put the Brewers in a pretty good spot early. It's been an interesting ride. So wanted to check in with Tom about a number of things. Obviously, you know, the success of the team, the decision to skip Chase Anderson's start on Monday, the news coming out after the game Sunday, pretty significant. Without Chase Anderson, they're going to go with a bullpen, you know, committee type game in one of the most important games of the year. I mean, consider that game, what it could do. If the Brewers win that game, they would be up 3 games on the Cardinals with two head-to-head games left. They'd be guaranteed to emerge from that series with a lead for the top spot in the wild card. Also, they're 1 game away then. They only need to win one of the next 2 to win the season series. They're 8-8 against each other this year, and that season series is big because if those 2 teams finish the year tied, the team that has that head-to-head advantage is the one that's going to get to host that game. So winning the series is absolutely crucial for both sides. You know, the Cardinals, they still, like I said, they're still being chased by the Rockies. The Rockies just a game and a half back, so they're trying to get into the game at all. And the Brewers are trying to ensure that they get to host it at Miller Park on October 2nd. There's 1 week of baseball left, and your Milwaukee Brewers have 89 victories. What a place to be. As, you know, they're probably, barring a horrible meltdown, they're going to win in 91 or more and be the second best team in Brewers history behind only the 96-win 2011 team. So talked to Tom about that, some of the historical significance, talked about the MVP race with seemingly Javier Baez of the Cubs being the chief competitor to Yelich. After that, though, I've got a couple of really great interviews, a couple of them today. We've got Tim Dillard, the crazy Tim Dillard, who is a Brewers minor league pitcher, but you probably don't know him from that. He's a kind of a social media personality where he posts regularly videos featuring some of the guys on the Colorado Springs Sky Sox. It's all very, very funny. He's got some stuff I'm sure you've seen over the years. I mean, just really has a knack for great humor, great video and audio production. He's just a very fun personality. He was with the Brewers when they were playing their series at home against the Reds. He was part of the broadcast team. He was contributing to some of the pregame, postgame stuff, giving his impressions of what was going on. He's played with a lot of those current Brewers at Colorado Springs. He, of course, was with the Brewers, came up a few years ago, hasn't seen the big leagues in a while, has had actually a few rough years on the field, but such an engaging guy off the field and such an interesting personality, so funny, so much fun. So I had a chance to sit down and talk with him. Also, Curtis Granderson, the Brewers center fielder, acquired at the August trade deadline. He has been huge for them. He's pretty much leading off every game. As long as the Brewers are facing a right-handed pitcher, you can bet Curtis Granderson is getting into the game and has become almost indispensable as an August waiver claim who might have, you know, kind of looked like he was just going to be a bat off the bench, but that's not how it's worked. And talk to him, one of the most engaging people in Major League Baseball. He's just a Hall of Fame person and interview. We talked a lot about just sort of his background and stuff, and he grew up in the Chicagoland area, but you'll love the reason why he's not a Chicago Cubs fan. If you're familiar with his Wikipedia entry, you already know what I'm talking about, but some pretty cool stuff. So before we get though to Tim Dillard and Curtis Granderson, let's bring in the man, Tom Haudricourt. Here now is Tom Haudricourt, beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering the Milwaukee Brewers. He'll be there this week, or I should say, no, you'll be there. You'll be there in St. Louis, right, Tom, covering this huge series?
I will.
All right, so he'll be there following the action as the Brewers embark on a huge three-game series against St. Louis. Tom, that one obviously looms very large. The Brewers won't have to face Miles Mikolas, who pitched on Sunday, which is nice, but there's some interesting news that broke kind of after Sunday's win for the Brewers, that Chase Anderson's spot will be skipped. He will not be starting against St. Louis. Totally caught me by surprise. I didn't see this coming. They're going to go with a bullpen game. That's obviously the strength of the team, and Chase Anderson has given up a lot of home runs, but did that catch you off guard? I mean, what do you make of that decision that they made?
Yeah, I'm guessing that caught everybody off guard, probably including Chase Anderson. Although Todd Rosiak's reports seem to indicate that they had told Chase a few days ago. So, very interesting. Chase obviously has scuffled lately. He has certainly scuffled as far as number of outs he's been recording, too. He's been pitching very short outings. He's given up a lot of home runs this year. The interesting part of it is that apparently supersedes his career success against the Cardinals. He's pitched well against them over his career, very well at Busch Stadium, I think a 2.06 career ERA there. So this is one of those instances where how a pitcher is throwing the ball at present is taking precedence over how he's thrown the ball over his career against a certain team and in a certain ballpark. Very interesting. Surely will create some criticism if it doesn't work, don't you think?
Yeah, I do think, especially because you're talking about the first game of the series. You're going to use potentially some pretty important arms, bullpen arms, right out of the gate. And they've been able to rest some of these guys lately, which is nice. But, you know, if you have to use Jeffress, Knebel, Hader in that first game, well, now you kind of need a pretty deep start out of Gio Gonzalez in the second game. And it's not like Gio Gonzalez has worked beyond the fifth. I mean, none of these guys are going deep into their starts. So that's why I was surprised that Chase would be singled out. I mean, like, he's given up a lot of home runs, but he also isn't getting, it's not like people have a huge average against on him, you know, like he's as typical as any other, guy in the rotation.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The only other thing would be if there's a health issue involved, and it doesn't sound like it is. If it is, they're keeping it secret. Because Council didn't mention it and Anderson didn't mention it. So, but that was my first thought when I saw you been scratched. I said, oh, something's bugging him. But if it is, they're going to keep that secret from us, it looks like. So not a factor, it would seem. It does show you the importance they're putting on the game, the first game, though, because if they win it, they go up 3 and there's no way the Cardinals can catch them in that series for the number one wild card spot. So, it's like Council tells us all the time, tonight's the biggest game of the season, you know, and that he says that every night.
Yes, and he'll mean it on Monday. And the Brewers and Cardinals come into the series tied 8-8 head-to-head this year. So the winner of the series would also get home field tiebreaker if they wind up tied at the end of the year for that top wild card spot. So that's also a very big factor in all of this. This past week, Milwaukee won both of their series against the Pirates and Reds. They won 4 of 6. I mean, if you take a look at the big picture, they've got 89 wins now. I don't know if anybody thought that they were going to rack up this many wins. I mean, they're going to probably, knock on wood, they're going to surpass 90 and become the second winningest baseball team in Brewers history. I mean, when you put it that way, did you think when they broke camp they were capable of anything approaching this?
Well, I'll have to go back and look at what I predicted. I'm pretty sure the first number was an 8, not a 9.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
I don't remember how many games over 500. Because they went 86-76 last year, and I thought they improved themselves, especially with the additions of Kane and Yelich, I think I might have had them with 87 or so wins. I got to go back and look. But, I think 88 wins with a week to go, 89 wins with a week to go is, you know. I think if you would have told a lot of people if they won 89 for the season, would you be happy? They'd say, yeah, I'd be happy, you know.
Yeah, of course. And with 6 to go, including 3 against one of the worst teams in the AL, not that that always works out, but it does line up for them to get past that 90 win mark. Since we last spoke, Christian Yelich hit for the cycle again. Just another, you know, great achievement in the Christian Yelich resume. You know, much like Josh Hader in the first half, or really, I guess for now, because he's still doing great things, we're kind of running out of ways to explain how great Christian Yelich is. does he remind you of any player? I heard somebody compare him to Yount just as a runner, but is there any player that you've seen in recent Brewers history that you could compare Christian Yelich, what you're seeing out of Christian Yelich?
The base running thing with Yount is a definite compliment, whoever said that, because Yount was a great base runner. I don't know if anybody was Ben Ogilvie like this. I'm trying to think of left-handed tall hitters. Yelich is very unique. He has such long legs. Kind of a different body style. I don't know if there's anyone. I've never been very good at comparing players to past players because I think I just kind of look at everybody as unique in their own way. But I mean, he's having a second half for the ages. It's very interesting that he's hit more home runs since the All-Star break than he had in any previous full season of his career. He's just a three-run home run Sunday, against the Pirates. He just keeps, he's in good shape to win the batting title, and the Brewers have never had anyone win the batting title. And people could say, oh, batting average doesn't mean squat. And there's, some truth to that. But don't tell the guy that wins the batting title it means anything, because you're not going to get very far with that argument with him. I'm pretty sure the National League batting title comes with Tony Gwynn's name attached to it, the trophy. And that's a pretty good name to have attached to you.
Yeah, for sure. Ben Ogilvie did hit 41 home runs. I'm looking this up. In 1980, 41 home runs, 118 RBIs, had a 925 OPS, and finished 13th in the MVP voting. The American League might have been a different world in the 80s than it is today.
What were his on-base percentage and batting averages that year?
He had 362 on base percentage, batting average of 304. So that's not quite as good as what Yelich has.
But not that dramatically different either.
No. I mean, that was by far his best season, and he was an All-Star three times with the Brewers. So yeah, that is an interesting comparison. An outfielder who's made some flashy plays. That's also Ben Ogilvie. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, he's a kind of a tall, lanky guy with long legs, and kind of stood up straight in the box like Yelich does. Yelich stands up pretty straight in the box. He doesn't really go into a big crouch or anything. So,
right.
But I mean, it's just unbelievable how he just keeps doing it day in, day out. He's been going, like crazy since the All. It's never since the All-Star break. Most people would die to have them for their whole year.
Yeah, no doubt. I'll ask one more question about him in the MVP conversation before I let you go. But first, going to Gio Gonzalez, who is the Brewers have now won all three of his starts, and he hasn't worked deep into these starts, but he has set the table for the Brewers to win. I found it curious at the time when the Matt Harvey thing fell through, when it appeared the Brewers were going to claim Matt Harvey and the Reds basically said that they weren't willing to make the deal. I was surprised that the club seemed to value Gio Gonzalez a lot more because they were willing to part with two prospects, not guys who are top flight prospects, but still intriguing names that a lot of Brewers fans were familiar with. And now that's looking very smart because they brought Gio in. He beat Matt Harvey head to head this past week, which now the Brewers are 4-0 in games against Matt Harvey and Chris Archer since they sort of failed to acquire them. So this has all worked out very, very well. And I think Gio Gonzalez has put himself in position to be a big part of this postseason push, which I wouldn't have necessarily foreseen. He's been fantastic.
Yeah, we don't know for a fact that they offered more for Gonzalez than they did for Harvey because there was never any report of exactly who they offered for Harvey. And there was a perception, though, they didn't offer much, and that's why the Reds didn't do a deal. Well, it seems more like Reds' ownership decided it would be better to keep him than to trade him was kind of what stopped that deal from going through. So, I mean, who knows if all the details will ever leak out. I just found it fascinating when those two pitchers faced each other last week at Miller Park, and the Brewers won handily, and Harvey gave up 7 runs and Gonzalez gave up none. I've always believed that baseball is weirdly karmic, and that night was very karmic because the pitcher that they tried to trade for but didn't get, pitched terribly, and then the pitcher they ended up going after because they didn't get the first guy pitched great. So just you just never know how baseball is going to work out like that. But as you noted, they're 3-0 in his starts, which means that that's the maximum possible result that you can get from a pitcher is winning every game he pitches, right? And he didn't pitch great in one of them, but he pitched pretty good in the other two. And so, you know, I was thinking the other day, you know, we give so much attention to the July 31st non-waiver trade deadline, but look how well the Brewers did on the August 31st waiver deadline. They got Xavier Cedeño, who's yet to give up a run, Gonzalez, who we just mentioned is 3-0, and Granderson, who's played so good he's getting starts now. We saw him as maybe a left-handed bat off the bench, but instead he's been getting starts. The Brewers did pretty daggone good on August 31st.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And Granderson and Cedeño unquestionably going to be part of the playoff roster. And like I said, I think Gio Gonzalez will be too at this point. So like you said, couldn't have bolstered it much better than they did that day. January 25th and August 31st might be looked at as the magical days, 25th being the day that they got both Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain. And Cain was injured earlier in the week, and kind of, I think it was a back issue. That's probably the worst thing that could happen to the Brewers, is to lose one of those two guys with an injury. I got a sense that he would probably sit out the entire Pirates series, and I think Brewers fans had to breathe a sigh of relief when he pinch hit on Saturday and then started on Sunday. Did you have any sense of how long he might be out when that injury first flared up? If we, you know, if there was a chance we might not see him until the very last stages of the season?
You know, you never know with those side injuries. You can call it oblique, intercostal, ribcage, whatever you want to call it. It's on, you know, if it's on your side, that's a difficult place for baseball players because they torque their bodies so much. You know, they the hitters, you know, torque their bodies when they swing. The pitchers do it when they throw. So you just never know how long one of those things is going to bug a guy. And you don't want to bring him back too soon, because if they blow it out completely, then you're not going to play again for a long, long time. At this stage of the year, probably no more this season. You know, as you said, a very good sign that he pinch hit Saturday night, and then that he played Sunday and was productive too. So, you know, that you don't want to miss any of your top players when you're getting down to the final games like this. And so the fact that Kane's back out there, and let's face it, you know, he's a guy that's hard to keep off the field too.
Right.
If he can play, he wants to be out there. So just a very good thing for the Brewers that he didn't miss any more time than he did, you know?
Yeah. He kind of gingerly ran to first on a ball that I thought he probably could have gotten to second base on, a ball that was mishandled by the Pirates on Sunday. So I was thinking he was still dinged up, but then he stole a base. So it looks like he's, for the most part, back to well enough where he can contribute, which obviously is a big thing for this next series. You just wrote about Eric Thames and sort of how, you know, how his struggles have just been awful, and how he's been relegated to spectator duty for the, you know, really the last month. What do you make of that? What has happened to Eric Thames?
Well, actually, it was Todd Rosiak who wrote about him.
Oh, my bad. Oh, he will get me for that too.
You're gonna hear from Todd. You're gonna hear from Todd about that.
Yeah. I have got to get that right. That's terrible.
Yes. So Todd Rosiak, everybody, go on JS Online and check out his story on Eric Thames, which was posted about 5 o'clock on Sunday, I think. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's the woulda, coulda, shoulda season for him. You know, he starts out, he's doing okay, hitting some home runs, which is sort of his thing. Then he blows his thumb out in Kansas City early in the season and misses 6 weeks. And during that time, Jesus Aguilar takes over at first base and just goes crazy. You know, it's kind of like a Lou Gehrig, Wally Pipp thing there. And there was just no, you know, benching him at that point. And so they kind of moved him out to the outfield a little bit. And he's not, you know, really a proficient outfielder like Cain and Yelich and Braun are. So he was only going to see so much time out there. Then when the Granderson was acquired, that was kind of it as far as seeing any outfield time. So he's basically been relegated to left-handed pinch hitter. He is not prospered in that role. He's one of those guys that, you know, needs a bunch of at-bats to keep his feel up there. So it's kind of been a lost year for him. And if you read Todd's story, you'll see that to his credit, he takes the high road and doesn't do a lot of moaning and whining and woe is me. And he says it's the focus is on the team now as it should be. But, you know, his future with the Brewers definitely is in question. You know, Aguilar is a minimum salary guy who looks like, you know, he's got over 30 homers and over 100 RBIs. So, you know, Thames still has a year left on his deal with an option year after that. And, you know, right now you would imagine he'd probably be open to being traded over the winter.
Yeah, he still has a really favorable contract. It would not be hard to move him or really to keep him, even if it were just a guy off the bat. There isn't, or off the bench, there isn't a ton of downside, but a fun player, and the team is a lot more, you know, a lot better off when he's clicking. We've seen that at times this year and last year as well. Corey Knebel is pretty much all the way back. I think it's up to 11 scoreless innings since he's come back from AAA when they sent him down for a little bit of a mental break. You know, if we're mapping out a playoff roster for a full playoff series, not really counting the wild card game, obviously Knebel is in that mix. He's your third best reliever, with Hader and Jeffress above him, and then Cedeno, Soria, and then it's kind of hard to figure who's going to be in the bullpen for the postseason. You've got a lot of options. You've got Taylor Williams, you've got Junior Guerra, you've got guys who are going to not be that frontline starting, you know, maybe like a Zach Davies or Chase Anderson. You know, there's a lot of options there. I'm having a hard time putting that together. Do you have any insight into that?
Well, you get to reset your roster before and after the wildcard game in the division series. So you got a winner-take-all game. I'm guessing you're not going to put your full rotation on there.
No,
you
not for sure.
A starter, maybe a backup starter, and then the rest of them are going to be bullpen guys. And then you'll flesh it out with some more starters if you advance to the division round, where it's best three out of five, and you need to have some more starters. So it'll be interesting. You know, back to the Corey Knebel. Has any pitcher ever benefited more from a 10-day reset than Corey Knebel? You know, they sent him down, but he didn't go down for about 7 days. He stayed in Milwaukee and worked with Derek Johnson and Lee Tunnell on bullpen sessions. Then he finally went down and made one appearance, one inning, and came back and was back to his old self again. I mean, that was one heck of a reset, you know what? I wish when my cable went down at home, I could push a button and get it to reset as quick as Corey Knebel got to reset his season. And what a difference it's made. You know what's interesting, JR, is he's kind of pitching now in the role that Hader was in at the beginning of the season, in the middle of games, to bridge to the late inning guys, which used to be him, but now is more often than not Hader. So the order of the bullpen may have changed, but the faces remain the same as far as high leverage guys. And they obviously feel very good about their bullpen right now. And why shouldn't they? It's been the strength of the team all year. They scuffled a little bit in August as did the starting rotation, but you know, they're back pitching again. You know, Jeffress has barely pitched in the last 10 days.
Yeah, they haven't needed him.
Yeah. So, he should be very well rested for this final week.
That's a good point about the roles that Hader and Knebel play, and they all have the one thing in common, that they can miss bats and they can get rack up strikeouts and kill rallies. So
you can't teach it. You can't teach, just like you can't teach speed with a position player. You can't teach strikeouts for a pitcher. You know, they either can do it or they can't. And what makes those two guys so fantastic is if they get in trouble, they can strike their way out of it.
Mm-hmm, and, for sure.
That's the way you want. I mean, and let's talk about Hader for a second. You know, I think we're almost like ho-humming when he comes in and strikes out three guys because we've seen it so often. Well, man, we should never get that jaded on what this guy's doing. You know, he just set two more records over the weekend, most consecutive outs via strikeout. I love that the record holder was Mitch Stetter, too. I mean,
yes.
Who had Mitch Stetter in that pool, right?
Left-handers with big hair. That seems about right.
But he didn't throw he didn't throw 96, 7 miles an hour like Hader does. So he breaks that record. And then the fascinating record is he breaks John Hiller's record for most strikeouts in a season by a left-handed reliever. And Hader did it in 77 innings. 136 strikeouts. Hiller did it in 150 innings.
Yeah,
which tells you two things above all else. hitter strikeout ratio is ridiculously good, and pitchers in the 60s, relief pitchers in the 60s, pitched a lot more innings than they do in modern day baseball, no matter how much bullpenning we're seeing.
Yeah, the idea of piggybacking seems modern, but really it's just they got the starter and then one reliever to take you the rest of the way. That seems like how the 60s may have operated a little bit.
I mean, Hiller throwing 150 innings, he might have ranked in this year's top 10 for starting pitchers innings.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt he would. All right, so I promised we'd go back and hit the MVP conversation a little bit. It seems like right now it's coming down to Christian Yelich and Javier Baez. And the point you're seeing a lot of people on the Cubs side of that making are that Baez is rare in that he's so versatile and can play all these infield positions and play them all well.
Right.
You voted in these things before, and I'm kind of curious, how much does that matter to you? How much are you thinking about some of that broader stuff versus, because you don't get to see a lot of these guys play every day, so how much is it just pulling up some stats and really comparing and contrasting versus thinking about those maybe bigger issues like positional versatility?
Yeah, I mean, positional versatility is a thing you might use if guys had exactly the same offensive numbers and you're looking for ways to separate them on your ballot. You know, the thing that people need to understand about the MVP ballot is there's 10 names on the ballot, way more than any of the other awards. So you have 10 blanks to fill in. And they're weighted, you know, according to how the first, second, third. I believe first gets 13 points and then it drops down to like 10 or 8 for second and then down, you know, to 1 for 10th. So it's weighted like it should be for first place votes. But in a year in which the balloting is close, as it was last year with Giancarlo Stanton and Joey Votto, you know, guys can get hurt if they're not included in the top 3 or 4 spaces as opposed to what the other guy was. So if for some reason you just don't like a guy and you vote him 8th instead of 2nd, you know, it could cost him the MVP award in a close year. I don't know how close this ballot's going to be. I had, you know, in my own mind about a week ago, it looked to me like three guys were separating themselves, Baez, Story, and Yelich. And then Story got hurt, you know, and but he had lifted his team just like Yelich. And then Baez, you know, the thing about him is you hear three things about him: home runs, RBIs, and what you just said, versatility. The interesting thing there is everybody hits home runs now, so he's not special there. And most of the modern day people think RBI is just the biggest crap stat ever. You know, it's amazing to me how people have downgraded RBIs and, oh, well, it's a function of opportunities. Yes, it is, but you have to convert on them, you know? And, you know, if you look at all the guys that are leading in RBIs, it's all the best hitters in the league. You know, you don't see any, you know, bad player with 100 RBIs. So, and then as we talked about earlier, the positional versatility, you know, Yelich has the same versatility in the outfield that Baez has in the infield. Baez can play second, short, and I guess third. Yelich can play left, right, and center. He's almost equally split starts in left and right with about a dozen starts as well in center. So not everybody can do that and be proficient defensively. You know, during these last few days when Kane has been injured, as we talked about earlier in this podcast, they put Yelich in center and they don't even blink. You know, it does, and he does fine out there. So, you know, I don't see positional versatility being the difference in this MVP vote, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think I could see that Javier Baez playing all those infield positions, that's a higher degree of difficulty than outfield. But what you said earlier is interesting. If voters are just pulling out sheets of stats and comparing, contrasting, you know, Christian Yelich's offensive numbers are quite a bit better than Baez's. And you could see Baez slipping then, if it's just offensive production, slipping to 4th or 5th on a lot of ballots and not being in the top 2, whereas Yelich would be almost irresistible. His numbers, both, you know, both the regular stats and the sabermetric stats, really, especially the sabermetrics, love Yelich. So,
well, let's not kid ourselves. The MVP is an offensive award.
Agreed, yeah. So I think this bodes really well. I think Christian Yelich is going to win the MVP.
He checks a lot of the boxes.
Tom Haudricourt. You can find all his material at jsonline.com. Thanks for joining us, Tom. We look forward to reading what you got from St. Louis. This is a heck of a week, right? This is a fun time to be a Brewers fan.
Doesn't get any better than incredibly huge games in the final week. There's a whole bunch of teams just playing out the string right now, but the Brewers and the Cardinals aren't in that group.
Yep, it's going to be the premier matchup of the first part of the week here. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, three huge games. Tom Haudricourt will be in St. Louis. You can follow him online at Haudricourt or, like I said, at jsonline.com. We'll talk to you soon, Tom.
Thanks, JR.
Thanks to Tom. Now we move to an interview with the incomparable Tim Dillard, Milwaukee Brewers minor leaguer, former Milwaukee Brewers major leaguer. He's made a couple appearances in the big leagues. He has not, however, pitched in the big leagues since 2012, but he has been with the Colorado Sky Sox. He tried indie ball for a while, came back into the organization, and now he's, you know, he's hanging out, being some minor league depth, but also being one of the more engaging personalities in minor league baseball for any franchise. He's well known for the videos that he's made and put on social media, Twitter especially, just spoofs of movies or just ideas he's had. He's kind of the guy who's responsible for Brent Suter's Raptor sort of motif, I guess you could call it, where he noticed Brent Suter's walk, style of walking, his gait, and turned it into a Dub Smash video that that caught on very quickly. He did and this is something we refer to in the interview, a spoof of Saturday Night Live's opening credit sequence, making it live on Saturday night from Milwaukee instead of New York, and it's got a lot of fun footage of Milwaukee. Very much looks like a copycat of the Saturday Night Live thing with a lot of special guest appearances. He's done some great stuff. There's a recent one of minor leaguers right around September call-up time checking their phones hoping for the September call-up the word, and there's a clever song playing in the background. You should check these out. He's Dim Tillard on Twitter. That's DimTillard. That's a spoonerism for you for on his name, and you could find a ton of funny stuff, and he happened to be in Milwaukee checking in with the broadcast team. It's not the first time he's been hanging out with the big league club after the minor league season ends, and he's just a great guy to talk to and very funny. So here's my interview with Tim Dillard. Joined now by Tim Dillard, former Brewers pitcher, current Brewers minor leaguer, and social media influencer. Can I call you that? I feel like that's a term that gets thrown around. That's kind of what you are, right?
That's the second time I've heard the word influencer, and I'm honestly, I don't know what it means. I'm not trying to influence anybody.
I think you influence a lot of people. You influence them to laugh or something like that.
I'm influencing them to do less and to just take time out of their day, to be lazy, and watch my videos on Twitter.
Yes. Well, outside of a cat being on a Roomba, you're probably the number two greatest cause of lost productivity in Milwaukee.
Nice. Haven't seen that one yet.
So what are you up to right now? Because we're at Miller Park, and you're here working with some of the broadcast team. Minor league season's over. What are you working on right now?
So I don't really know. I'm actually supposed to be getting ready for the broadcast tonight, and I've put it off because I honestly don't really know what to do. And I'm just going to kind of wing it. But right now, enjoying it. I was just in the clubhouse a while ago and just talked to a couple of guys, just literally about nothing. And I know everybody was wondering about Shaw's injury or Kane's injury. And, you know, I didn't know what to do, but I saw Shaw walk by, and I said, "Hey, man, you're alive." And he goes, "Oh, I'm good to go." And he's back in the lineup. And I don't know. I'm kind of just getting my feet wet. I don't know what I'm doing.
So let's try to do the brief origin story of your interest in video making and just production in general. I think I saw you weren't even on Twitter until like 2013, which I guess seems kind of late to the party for as active as you are there. But where did this stem from? I'm assuming you were kind of into video creation a long time before you were playing baseball in the minors.
I mean, when I was a kid, me and my brothers would make, you know, big giant videos on the VHS camera plugged up to the VCR. You know, like, hey, we can see each other on the TV, and all that's compacted into a little phone now. And
yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I didn't get Twitter for a long time because I really thought it was a really negative thing, and what little I knew about it, and I didn't want to be a part of something like that. And I finally got convinced by my wife, who really regrets saying anything.
That's so funny. That's exactly how my wife feels about Twitter.
But I thought I was going to be done with baseball. I was in a basement in Pennsylvania playing independent ball and living with a host family, and so I signed up for Twitter. And my first tweet was, "You're welcome, world."
Yes.
And that was my pact. That was my contract saying, nothing I post is going to be serious, and it's all for fun. And
cool.
I don't know. Hopefully I've held up my end of the bargain that no one knows about. So
yes,
where I'm at.
I know many people have seen the various videos. Many of them feature your teammates with the Sky Sox.
How do you get those guys to warm up to that sort of thing? Because it's easy when, I guess, your brand, so to speak, is built. But in the beginning, I imagine, you know, guys aren't going to be sure about being featured in skits or whatever else you've got cooked up.
Well, up until that time, you know, nobody films. No one takes pictures in the clubhouse. Smartphones, you know, were around, but I don't think people knew what was going to happen with them.
Right.
And so, you know, everyone's always leery when something like that happens in the clubhouse. But, the teammates were great. I would like to say I built a relationship strong enough where they trusted me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I say that I think the Brewers, because of I've been with them so long, they allowed me to continue doing things like that. Yeah, I can't imagine, like, somebody else going to a new organization. Like, if I went to, you know, another team, I don't know if they would let me do this kind of stuff because they don't know me, they don't trust
me. Right, yeah, I didn't think about that they'd have to kind of give the okay, the blessing for
this stuff. Yeah, but, I told them, I said, hey, I went to some of the Brewer, you know, top guys, and I said, if you want me to stop doing this kind of stuff, I will. Mm-hmm. And I had one of them tell me, listen, I'm just waiting for the next video.
Excellent.
Yeah, and really, you know, I think the guys see it. The 6-year free agent guys come over. They've maybe heard about some of the videos, but they don't want to be in them.
Right.
But when they finally see how much fun goes on, like, honestly, the end product is not near as much fun as doing it.
Right, of course.
We have some really cool stuff, and I think they just want to be a part of it. We used to play cards all the time or board games, and I think nowadays this could be the next wave, and guys buy into it. And it's not for everybody, but it's a way to build some team camaraderie.
I was going to ask about how this team, this Brewers team, has for years been kind of seen as sort of a fun organization. It's not very, you know, not very stuffy. And I was kind of thinking maybe you kind of contributed a little bit to that because a lot of these guys. You've been teammates with many of them, most of them in Colorado. But maybe it's also kind of the other way around because what you're saying is the team has to give their blessing too.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, though, those Sky Sox teams are just as fun as this Major League team. You know, they look like it, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if I was here in the clubhouse as a player, I probably wouldn't be able to do as many videos.
No, probably not.
Yeah, I got to come in and be professional.
but not in Colorado.
Yeah,
man.
Not in Colorado.
That's
you're
a free-for-all.
Yeah, you're in AAA. It's, you know, what I really liked was a lot of feedback from fans about getting to know a player before he makes it to the big leagues because there is no MILB network. There's no way to get these guys and let their personality shine. You know, and so I remember when Brent Suter got called up, I don't usually tweet about guys getting called up, but I had to do it because I was like, Milwaukee, your favorite player just got called up. You don't know it yet, but he's there. And I don't know. I think the Brewers like to have a good time. That stems from the coaching staff to the training staff to, you know, guys just being relaxed and loving baseball. And it should be like that in every organization. It may be.
Yeah.
But I feel like it comes out with the Brewers because it's on the field. You can tell they're enjoying what they're doing.
Do you feel like you sort of take the responsibility of a leader or a morale builder at AAA? You've been there a long time, you know, veteran of the whole circuit. That this is, in a way, it's also a little bit calculated to sort of bring guys together?
You know, I've always kind of liked to do goofy stuff in the clubhouse. Nothing big,
right.
You know, before we would film things. And I kind of compare it to a little bit of what Joe Madden does with the Cubs. You think about every spring, he has like a race car on the field or, you know, he brings a zoo and lets them loose.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there's a giraffe in the weight room. Like, I don't know what's going on, but I asked some friends that have played for him. And I say, does he do this stuff to kind of break up the monotony of the game?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it is.
Sure, sure.
And I tell everybody, if you don't like the movie Groundhog Day, then maybe baseball's not your cup of tea. But, you know, anytime you can break up that everyday grind, and that could be any workplace, but especially on the baseball field, it's, I don't know, it's, people look after that stuff. They seek it out, and when you find something special, you run with it.
You'd mentioned that you went down to Indy Ball. You've had two stints with the Brewers, and then did step. You know, you were out of the organization, and then came back. So, what were those conversations like? As far as, I mean, did you expect you would ever have a chance to come back with the Brewers? Did they seek you out? Like, how did that come back together?
Yeah, 2012, the season ended, and they said they weren't going to sign me back, and I couldn't find another team in the United States that would give me a chance. So
there was no one.
So I went to Mexico. We're actually doing this interview in the Telemundo station.
That's right. You probably speak very good Spanish as a result.
Sí, poquito. but, you know, I went to Mexico for a month and did really well and got released because there's some different rules down there. You can only have 5 foreigners.
Okay.
And as bad as I tried to pass as a Mexican-born, you know, they didn't believe me. So I went back home, and ended up getting a job in independent ball and didn't know if that was going to be the end of me or not. And the Brewers had a need about a month into the season, and they called me and they said, would you consider coming back? They're like, we can give you free coffee plus. And I was like, I'll take it.
Perfect. And you were back.
And I was back. But then they let me go again. They've let me go 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, but they keep bringing you back.
You know, I've weaseled my way to the press box, the dugout, you know.
You're like K-Rod on the minor league level. They kept bringing K-Rod back, but he wasn't doing all this other stuff.
Yeah. He was just getting outs on the field.
Yeah.
Anybody can do that. Dang.
So I know you get this question a lot. I mean, you've just got to love baseball because you've been doing this a long time. You've been at AAA many years and haven't cracked back into the big leagues. I mean, how do you describe that to people? Because I'm sure there are those who wonder, why are you still doing this? Why are you still putting yourself through this?
Yeah, I get the question a lot. Like, why are you still around baseball? And I tell them I don't have any qualifications to do anything else. this is all I got.
Building
your
resume.
Yeah, people think, oh, you must love it. It's like, no, I'm holding on for dear life, man. I honestly don't know what's next, and I'm just kind of trying anything that comes up. And
yeah.
There's two things I know. And one of them's baseball, and I don't know the other one.
You've used that line before. You can't recycle lines on this podcast.
We can edit this, right?
I will. Yeah. I will edit that out. I will absolutely edit that out. You can't recycle lines. That's really funny. Something like the Saturday night video at Miller Park where you have Euchre, you know, live from Miller Park at Saturday night. I mean, that's kind of one of the ones most people know about. The camera production in that is so good. You've got camera shots that are Milwaukee that look just like the SNL intro.
Yeah.
With the music and everything. I mean, that takes some talent. Like, are you a one-man show? Do you hire people or just have friends help you out? Like, how do you get that production level?
No, I just literally ripped it off YouTube.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I
was staying that particular time when I came up with the idea, because I love doing the voice, you know, like, right. Will Ferrell, you know. And so I'm putting this thing together, and I just started walking around the city. I was staying downtown, so I'd walk around, and I kept thinking, like, SNL in the 90s, where you just, you know, move the phone around.
Camera,
you know,
yep.
That's how I envisioned it, and it kind of played out that way. And it's really non-intrusive to guys when I can say, hey, Bron, will you look at me and give me a thumbs up?
Right.
And he's like, okay. And I'm like, 3, 2, 1, go. And he looks at me and gives me a thumbs up. I'm like, hey, you nailed it. Guys are willing to do that because it's very minimal.
Sure.
And so that's why I got David Stearns to do it. Perfect. I got Mark Antanasio to do it.
Yep.
And that's really how I got Euchre. I asked Bob. I said, hey, man, I'm doing a video. Could you help me out? And because he's not really known for doing a lot of this stuff.
Right, right.
And he was like, Dilly for you, I'll do it, you know. I don't think that's what he said. I think he said, sure.
He said, fine.
Sure, you bum.
How much time do you need? How much time do you need?
It's actually one of my favorite videos just because I know the beginning, the middle, and the end of everything that came about out of that. And it was really fun. And I saw him a while ago, and he was like, are we doing something else? I was too intimidated. I have no idea. Exactly. I go blank around Bob Euchre.
So what else is on the Greatest Hits album? I personally think the Raptor, the Brent Suter Raptor, Dub Smash, that definitely put him on the map as such. There's the One Call Away video with the minor leaguers right around September call time, which I thought was really, really good.
Well, we did one a few years ago, and this was kind of the next one in that series. Is we did Sarah McLachlan's, the one about the cats and the dogs.
Okay.
In the arms of an egg. Sounded pretty good.
Yeah, SNL ripped on that one too, I think. The dogs! Yeah, the dogs! Did, yeah.
So instead of that, we just did slow motion of players kind of looking off in the distance, like kind of sad. And, and threw some words up there. Less than 3% of minor leaguers are rescued to the big leagues every September. You know, and because everybody wants to get called up, you know, adopt a minor leaguer. If you're out there and you're listening, adopt a minor leaguer. But anyway, we had a lot of fun with it. Great response. Up until recently, that's probably our best video that we've ever done.
Yeah.
And so the One Call Away, when I heard that song the first time, I don't know when, I'm sure it was popular for a long time, but as soon as I heard it, I was like, we got to do something in that capacity. I just didn't know what it was.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one. And I mean, it kind of highlights how minor league, especially at AAA, it is a little, there's that element of business to it where you do get guys who think they're going to get a chance in the big leagues and it doesn't happen. And you get a lot of guys who are free agents, new guys that get stashed at AAA. How do you not get jaded? Because I feel like there would be a lot of times, especially when you're a pitcher in Colorado Springs on top of it. So every time you take them on, you got to deal with the mountain air on top of it. But how do you stay positive through all of that?
Well, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. And I think as guys get older, they realize they really don't have a lot of control over that.
Right.
People use, you know, key phrases like, you got to you got to make it happen or whatever. Right. You got to be at the right place at the right time, mm-hmm. or you got to be a phenom. You know, if you're a first rounder, you'll get more chances than an 80th rounder. I don't know how many rounds there are, but something like that. Yeah. And there is no formula. And I think when guys realize that, they actually become better players. Because it goes one or two ways. When you find out you're not that important in the big scheme of things, you either get after it and stop looking for some sort of handout,
yeah.
or you just completely fold and you're out of baseball.
Sure. Right.
And that, to me, is when you find out what guys are made of. And I think the Brewers saw a lot of that this year, where guys went to AAA, and instead of being bitter or saying, woe is me,
right.
they just went out there, and if it was a hitter, they went out there and they took early BP, and they hit balls, and they took reads in the outfield or ground balls, and pitchers were out there working on their craft,
yeah.
asking questions, getting with the pitching coach. And what you find is that those opportunities come back.
Yeah,
you know? Good for the Brewers. They should be doing that. They should be giving guys second chances and third chances, and you know, yeah. if David Stearns is listening, you know, maybe seventh chances.
Do you need a reliever? Yeah,
I need like 18 chances.
I can get righties yeah. out, man. Yeah, you're bringing up. Junior Guerra, Domingo Santana, Brett Phillips, all guys who went down at one point and all found their way back. So you're right about that. The last question then, Colorado Springs is kind of leaving. I mean, the AAA team is, the franchise will come back as a rookie league team, I believe. But what is it like? I know that's not personally affecting the players on the team, but to have that be the last season of a AAA franchise, I'm sure there's some sadness in Colorado Springs. So kind of what was that experience like for you guys?
Yeah, as far as like the scenery and the people there, it's some of the best I've been around. I was embraced right away as family. I've had dinner at several fans' house. I know that not in like a weird way, but like, yeah, you meet people and you say hi to them and they're like, man, I want to cook you a home cooked meal. And I'm like, that's better than sleeping on the couch in the clubhouse. So
of course you've had dinner at fans' houses in Colorado Springs. Of course.
Yeah,
you
so you know, I was embraced. I had a great time in that regard, but I tell you, it's a tough place to play for yeah. anybody. And it's a tough place to pitch. You just have to survive it. And I tell guys, you may come in here with grape skin, you may be sort of soft, or maybe you've never been challenged before.
Right.
But when you leave there, you should be awarded a medal, which they don't. but you have rhinoceros skin. You have yeah. rhino skin. If you can get through that, you can get through anything. And right. I think, you know, whether guys continue to play or go to other organizations or they're in the big leagues here now, regardless of what happened in AAA in those years, they're better off. Like, they're better off now, mentally, physically, just having an idea on how to prepare and how to go out there and focus.
If you're not following Dim Tillard on Twitter,
what's
you're missing out. The best spoonerism on Twitter right there. He is Tim Dillard, Brewers pitcher, minor league pitcher, former major league pitcher, and also very active on social media. So I appreciate it. Thanks for sitting down with me.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
Next on the docket, we got Curtis Granderson, Brewers outfielder, who has been a huge, huge asset for the team since he was acquired at the end of August. Brings a ton of leadership to the equation. Brings a veteran bat who's, you know, he's shown a very good patience at the plate. He's also can hit a little bit, shown his power a little bit. He had that triple that bounced off the basket at Wrigley Field and fell down. Actually, I was speaking to him, I believe, just a couple days after that happened. So he references that in our interview here. But he is such an engaging, interesting guy. He's been a player rep. He's been a representative of Major League Baseball in a few capacities. He's just a really interesting person to talk to. He's actually sort of been mentored to Corey Ray, who was the Brewers Minor League Player of the Year. Neglected to ask him about that. But I'm sure they'll get to, you know, touch base when Corey Ray comes to accept that award sometime, I presume, in this last this upcoming last homestand against the Detroit Tigers for 3 games. But Curtis also he's donated a ton of money to his alma mater, University of Illinois Chicago, and his name is on the stadium there, Curtis Granderson Stadium. So asked him about that a little bit, and just really enjoyed talking to him. He's a fantastic dude. And so here's what we had to talk about. And this is me interviewing Curtis Granderson. Joined now by Brewers outfielder Curtis Granderson, a newcomer to the team in September and obviously off to a very good start. But I'm going to go back to a game in 2007 when you're with the Tigers. That's when Justin Verlander throws a no-hitter against the Brewers. I happen to be in the stands that night with my Tigers-loving family.
Gotcha.
What do you remember about that game? That's a I don't know, not a highlight for Brewers fans, but it's certainly a game that a lot of people remember around here.
You know what? Don't really remember too much about it because I actually wasn't involved in it. I don't think I had any hits. I didn't any balls out there, so there wasn't a lot that had to deal with me. Obviously, Verlander did what he's been doing all over the course of his career, and that was, you know, establishing his fastball and able to keep guys off balance with the off-speed stuff, and was able to stay late into the game and still had a lot left in the tank as the game continued to go on.
And what's it like watching that guy then win the World Series in Houston? I mean, obviously, he's a lifelong Tiger. You were a Tiger for a long time. Mm-hmm. He kind of came up around the same time. What was that whole experience like seeing him hoist the trophy, I guess?
Well, it was interesting because it was against me.
I know.
So, you know, obviously getting a chance to play against him and watch him get an opportunity to do it. You know, he's been doing a lot of great things, and just another one of his accolades you can add to his trophy case.
Yeah, and it is a bummer you came against you three times now. You've been to the World Series, and playoff baseball obviously is going to change from regular season baseball for a lot of reasons that I think we know. Are there ways that it changes that maybe fans don't know about or even players don't know about until they've gone through it?
There's a lot of off days.
Yeah,
which definitely I would love to see change because you play 162 with not as many off days. But then for some reason we get to October, we like to throw a bunch of them in there.
Right.
So I'd like to see that side of it change. But in terms of that, outside of that, you know, I think everything kind of still remains the same. The games tend to have a little more length to them. For some reason, you feel like you're there a little bit earlier in the day.
Sure,
you tend to stay after a little bit longer. So it's just a more fatiguing day and more mentally and physically challenging day compared to the 162.
Wikipedia, no idea if this is true, tells me that you were not a Cubs fan. I know you were a Braves fan growing up. Yeah. Not a Cubs fan because Saved by the Bell was interrupted on WGN. Yeah. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's going to make you a hero to a lot of Brewers fans that you eschewed Cubs fandom for this sort of thing.
Yeah, true, but I wasn't a White Sox fan either, so a lot of people assume I was one of the two Chicago teams. But a Braves in the 90s, it was hard not to cheer for them. But one of the reasons why I didn't like the Cubs was because of Saved by the Bell. It was one of my shows that I enjoyed watching a lot, and I'd look forward to catching them once I got home from school around 3:30, and then on the times where I came home not realizing that the Cubs played day games,
right?
I was like, oh man, why are they on right now? Everyone else is playing a night game,
no doubt.
I'm trying to watch my show. So that was part of that went into that.
That's fantastic. You've gotten to be a player ambassador for MLB in a number of capacities. What are some of the things you've done that rank way up there? I know you've traveled a lot of places. What are some of the coolest experiences you've had just representing baseball?
Probably most recently getting a chance to play with Gift Ngope. I got a chance to meet him in South Africa back in 2008, and then now we got a chance to be teammates in 2018. So getting a chance to see what MLB was trying to do by pushing the game and making it more global than it already is, and then going ahead and see some of the benefits of what could happen by getting a chance to see guys that I got a chance to be a part of actually make it to the show, which is what you ultimately want to have happen.
Right.
But the message that I always try to drive home to everywhere I go throughout the world is not necessarily that you could become a Major League Baseball player, because the numbers are very difficult to do that, but that baseball gives you an opportunity to show that no matter how tall you are, no matter how short you are, big, small, fast or slow, you have the ability to play this game as long as you have a little bit of discipline, a little bit of hand-eye coordination. And you get a chance to have teammates from all over the world, and the possibilities that can come out from it, such as getting your education paid for, are the biggest things and the most important things. And hopefully that's one of the things that not only Major League Baseball, but you know, NCAA and a bunch of other baseball organizations continue to push out. There's always a lot of talk about, hey, let's get the next numbers of guys in the big leagues. I think people forget how difficult it is to get to the big leagues. So let's start focusing on some of the other things, like, you know, making sure we can get kids into college, making sure that we get all the Division I schools fully funded so they have the ability to get more kids to college. You know, helping out the Division II schools, helping out the junior colleges and the NAIA schools. You know, these are a lot of different ways that you can continue to expand on the global reach, because some of these kids that come from all over the world do have opportunities to go to college here in the United States, and baseball and NCAA can definitely do a combination of things together to make that happen.
So you've worked with the RBI program as well. Do you think baseball has made good inroads into cities and getting, you know, young black kids interested in baseball, or is there just still a really long way to go?
I think there's been the train has started moving.
Okay.
We're far from the end. It's very interesting, you know, when you see things that are great, such as all 30 major league clubs having an academy in the Dominican Republic, which is absolutely amazing. That's where you have a lot of talent. You have a lot of ability to provide opportunities for baseball players to not only learn English, but play baseball, get fed, you know, help out with their physical abilities, and then hopefully make a career out of it. But not all 30 major league teams have some sort of academy in the United States, which is very interesting to me. You know, you have Harlem RBI, you have Compton, Urban Youth Academy, you got Kansas City, you got Cincinnati, and there's a few, but there's no reason why we shouldn't have them in all 30 clubs in some sort of concerted effort just to, again, get kids into the game. Those kids eventually become fans. Those kids ultimately might work in the game.
Right.
They might end up enjoying the game. They can hopefully go to college because of the game. All these different things which we're trying to do.
Yeah.
If Major League Baseball becomes an option for them, great. But again, the chances of that happening are very slim.
Right.
But all those other things are definitely possibilities.
You've been named Marvin Miller Man of the Year. Marvin Miller, kind of a name we associate with labor and the workforce and the Players Association. You've been a player rep a few times for a lot of years in your career. What is that like? I mean, is that just a responsibility? Or I mean, is it kind of fun to be that sort of liaison between the players and the, you know, conversations behind the scenes? Or like, how was that role for you? How important was it?
It's interesting. You learn a lot. You realize that this is a game, but there's also a business in the game, and a very big business in the game. A lot of the things that not only the fans don't see, but you as a player don't necessarily see until you start looking in and digging into it.
Right.
And a lot of things that don't always come to light that happen behind the scenes in order for us to go out there and get a chance to play in front of a lot of fans out there. So it's very interesting. It's very emotional at times. It's very stressful at times. But it's a reason why the Players Union with Major League Baseball is one of the toughest. We continue to fight and try to make things as best as we can, not only for the players, but the well-being, so we can go out there and put the best product out on
sure.
the field to give the fans exactly what they're looking forward to. And that's an exciting, entertaining 2 to 3 to 4 hours of action out there on that field, because again, I think the one thing that everybody forgets is that professional sports by definition comes down to one thing, and that's entertainment.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to put things out there that are going to be the most entertaining, and that's what we're trying our best to do.
You got to be one of the few living people who have an athletics facility named after you. How you know, how much does UIC mean to you and to be a part of their athletic tradition now as well?
Well, it's great. You know, UIC gave me an opportunity to further my education, gave me a chance to play baseball, and also an opportunity to play basketball, which is the main reason why I signed
up. Right, yeah,
they're
yeah.
going to give me the ability to do both. And a lot of people say, why not do this, that, and the other for all these other people? None of these other places recruited me, so why am I going to do any of that stuff?
No doubt,
you know?
No
so
doubt.
I got to go to where the place that was showed some interest into me. And then for the 3 years of baseball time, the coach that was there and is still there right now, Coach Mike D and Sean McDermott, were very instrumental not only in my development, my career. JT Brewer, who played for the Brewers, was my first hitting coach. And then Scott Stachowiak was my coach my draft year. So a lot of those guys I've stayed in touch with and communicated with, a lot of the teammates I've met along the way. And when given the opportunity to do some stuff at the university, that not only was going to help the university, but the kids in the Chicagoland area,
right.
and help me establish the Chicago Baseball and Educational Academy, it was a no-brainer to go ahead and get involved and donate and help out there. Then the school decided to name it after me and asked
awesome.
Me what I wanted to name it. And I didn't want to call it me. I wanted to call it something else.
Sure.
But they're like, nah, we got to call it after you. So I still call it CG Stadium. I can't.
You don't want to call it. Oh, yeah. I'm going to go over to Curtis Granderson Stadium.
It,
I can
you know?
See that.
There's actually a concert there this weekend.
Really? Who's playing?
Yeah. Rich the Kid is actually playing from Chicago. It's like a thing for current students, alumni, faculty and members. It's like a welcome back to school kind of
thing.
They've had some big names before. Lupe Fiasco's played there before. Who else? I think even Chance the Rapper played there once before too.
Do you get dibs? You get to meet these guys, right?
I would love
to,
but it's this weekend.
Oh no, you
can't. Yeah, we got baseball. I got work I got to get to.
Sure.
Yeah.
What milestones do you want to check off your career? I mean, obviously you want to win the ring, but are there? I mean, 2,000 hits. Like, what are there things that you're still waiting for?
No, everything is too far away. There's nothing I'm really close to. I think the one I saw that was like, oh man, I'm only like 6 triples away from 100, but I'm like, that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah.
I did get one yesterday or 2 days ago, which was a fluke play, but the chances of me getting any of the big ones, I think, aren't going to happen. So the biggest one and the last remaining is the World Series one. It's interesting to tell people, you know, I've been there 3 times and come up short 3 times, so hopefully get a chance to get back there and check that one off the list.
So last one, Sports Illustrated considered you the friendliest player in baseball at some point. How does that resonate with you? Because I'm sure you want to be known for your athletic gifts as well, and I think you are for the most part, but to anybody you talk to who talks to you is excited that they got a chance to talk to Curtis Granderson. I mean, where does that come from? Is that just how you were brought up, or something you crafted over time? Like, how do you look at that?
I think it's just the upbringing, the people I've been around. You know, I've always been focused on treat others how you want to be treated, and you know, I've never felt that anything I did was more important or better than what you did. Baseball is my job. It doesn't make me who I am.
Sure.
It doesn't give me any more ability to expect things or demand things differently or treat other people differently, because there's so many other things that go so undetected and misrepresented, such as teachers, like both my mom, dad, and my sister currently are. You know, just in terms of the importance of the scale,
yeah,
both of them do so many amazing different things for the youth coming up, and I think just realizing that and understanding that puts me in a position that, hey, you know, I just want to enjoy the moments that I'm in and hopefully help other people around and have a good time.
All right, thank you so much, cool. Sir. It was a long one today, but all worth it because the Milwaukee Brewers are in the playoff mix. One more week of baseball to go, and then it is the postseason. The Brewers have a 99% chance, according to two sites, FanGraphs and Baseball Prospectus, of making the playoffs. Take that for what you will. I know that there are plenty of people who will not be truly satisfied until that magic number is zero. It is 4 going into the week, means any combination of wins or losses by the nearest opponent at this point, Colorado Rockies are the last team out, or I should say first team out, that will get the Brewers into the postseason officially. Probably looking at that wild card game October 2nd. This series against St. Louis will, you know, make all the difference when it comes to whether or not the Brewers will get to host that game. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe. Find me on iTunes. Find the podcast on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. Give us a ranking, rating, review, whatever the terminology is. Let us know what you think. You can also find me on Twitter at J.R. Radcliffe. That's J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. Let me know what you think. Appreciate all the feedback we can get. Enjoy this last week of the season. There's going to be some nervous moments, some fun moments. Enjoy it. And we're going to touch base again after the regular season has cleared, the dust has settled, and we know exactly what's going to come up for the Brewers in the postseason. Take care. We'll talk to you then.